This is The End User, episode 97 for Friday, June 8th. Use cases for styli. Hello and welcome to The End User, the show where we get together and talk about our experience with consumer technology with a bit of news from your perspective. The End User.
It's the tech news that you can use.
I'm your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
Whoa. That can't
there,
be.
There can only be one.
There can only be one. It's up to the listener to decide.
I'm Taylor Marr.
So we got a lot of news this week. This is crazy week.
They had that E3 games conference. We don't really pay that much attention to that because we're not really gamers, you and I.
Yeah, not a whole lot. And there was Computex, and the hackers abound have been very active trying to get at people's passwords, all kinds of stuff this week.
They sure have. I'm excited about next week. That's when we get all the Apple news.
That's right. That's your week. So you better own it next week when we get on air. Well, let's start off with the hacker news that I was talking about. LinkedIn has leaked about 6.5 million passwords, and they were hashed, unlike Sony, so there's a little bit less leakage there of the actual plain text passwords, but eventually, you know, if these things are in public, then they'll eventually get cracked, unless they're really, really secure. So this is why you have secure passwords. So if this happens, then you don't have to worry about it.
In case someone hacks a website that you use but doesn't hack it entirely?
Yeah, because what if your password was one of those passwords?
It seems like an unlikely event, but I guess it happened to 6.5 million people on LinkedIn and then another 1.5 million people on eHarmony.
Yeah, that's right. eHarmony also leaked some passwords. And Last.fm is also reportedly today having leaked some passwords. They're still investigating that, though, so we'll have to hear from them before we actually speak about it. But yeah, passwords abound in the last couple days. This is my chance to say, okay, use LastPass for your own good. Don't reuse the password on other sites. Use random passwords with LastPass. That's the way to go.
Well, I use 1Password.
Yeah, that works too. Or maybe just use a password manager that stores your passwords in a safe way. That way you don't have unique passwords across sites. Because if you were one of the 6.5 million people whose password leaked with LinkedIn and it got cracked, then you're in trouble on other sites if you reuse that password.
True. But you might be in trouble on LinkedIn even if your password wasn't hacked, because LinkedIn's iPhone app has been transmitting names, emails, and notes from your calendar over the web in plain text.
Ooh. Yeah, and this is like, who was doing that? Who kicked off this investigation? There was one app that was transmitting a bunch of contact information or something like that a while back.
Yeah, it was...
Was it Path?
I think it was Path was accessing your address book.
Right, and then people looked into all the other services and they're like, oh, wait, everyone's doing this. But yeah, so I think just with the extra attention that LinkedIn is getting because they leaked the passwords, they're under the microscope as it is. And when you're under the microscope, these kinds of things get discovered when they probably otherwise wouldn't have, right?
Right. Well, so the good news about this LinkedIn iPhone app is that it hasn't leaked any of your information unless you opted into the LinkedIn app calendar feature. So if you use the LinkedIn app but you don't use that calendar feature inside the app, then it won't do anything. But if you do use that calendar app, then it's leaking everything on your calendar.
Yeah, sort of. It's leaking it to anybody who may be spying on you on your own Wi-Fi hotspot, right? So if you're on a hotspot that doesn't have encryption, then you can get in there. Remember we talked about
anybody on LinkedIn's corporate network, which is apparently not very secure.
Well, that's up to them. I don't know about that bit. But you'd have to be on an unencrypted Wi-Fi network to get access to this information, like FireSheep, remember? Talked about FireSheep a long time ago.
Right.
But yeah, so LinkedIn, you're in trouble. Fix it. And I'm sure they've been a little weak on the communications when this first happened, but I feel like they're starting to get it. And the fact that they need to communicate what's going on with this to everyone who uses LinkedIn.
Right. Now, Chris, did we mention how you can find out if your password was leaked?
Right. LastPass, which is the password manager that I use and trust, has a little site where you can check. I would normally say, absolutely, do not enter your password into a third-party site to see if it has been leaked. Don't do that. But we trust LastPass. So in this particular case, you can go to lastpass.com/LinkedIn, and they've got a little checker there to see if your hashed password was one of the ones that was leaked. And you should probably just change your password anyway.
Yeah, probably. That's the better solution, right?
Yeah, even if your password was not in the leak, then you might as well, you should still just change your password, because you don't know what other data that the hackers didn't post publicly, and it just change your password. It's the safe thing to do.
Yeah, just change all your passwords all the time. Then you're safe.
Yeah, I think I have like 100 sites in my LastPass. That would be a nightmare if once a month or something like that, I had to go change my password.
No, just every single time.
Yeah, only use one-time passwords. That's uh-huh. Great.
and you can, but you can't have any algorithm for determining what's the next password, because then that could be hacked.
Yes. Yes.
Right. All right. Totally secure computing. So in our next story, Google had a big event this week, and I say it was a big event because Google made it a big event. But we're not sure if the announcement is all that big. They are bringing 3D mapping technology to Google Earth and to Google Maps wherever possible. So they have announced a whole bunch of new algorithms. So they're going to have actual, you know, not just rectangular prismatic buildings that are roughly to scale, but actual detailed 3D structures and topography, mountains, and stuff like that. I mean, they're really stepping it up. They've announced they're trying to bring a fully featured third dimension to Google Maps.
I love the idea of Google announcing algorithms.
Well, that's all they ever do.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Search is just an algorithm, right? All their products are algorithm based. Yep. Yeah, I also like this backpack that this guy's wearing in the article. The crazy camera backpack.
Yes. So it's...
I want one. Not really.
I mean, it just looks like the camera that they put on top of their Street View cars, but yeah. They turned it into a backpack. They had already turned it into bikes and boats and planes and stuff.
Yeah, they're all over the place.
Right. So they are going to bring a third dimension to all their Google Maps and Google Earth products. They've also announced that they are going to continue to be committed to bringing Google Maps to every platform. This is sort of a preemptive ceasefire against Apple's unplanned announcement that they're going to get rid of Google Maps for their built-in iOS apps for mapping and stuff.
Yeah, we already know that Apple's going to get OpenStreetMaps instead of Google Maps into their phone. It kind of makes sense. Did we talk about it when it happened, or were we waiting for the...
Well, it hasn't happened yet. They haven't announced
it. Yeah, it hasn't happened yet.
They did already start implementing it into some of their iLife apps, you know, like with iPhoto, and you can geotag your photos. They've already switched over from Google Maps to OpenStreetMaps.
So Taylor, I just did a search on my Windows phone for Google Maps and nothing really came up. So I guess they're not that committed after all.
Well, just because they don't have it on every platform yet doesn't mean that they're not committed.
Also, I love if you search on the Windows phone marketplace for Google Maps, the second result is a product called Bingle Maps.
Well, you need to download that product.
No, I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole, but...
Oh, you're touching that right now with your finger.
Actually, it's got good ratings, so maybe I should check it out. Bingle Maps. There you go. You couldn't make that up. Like, I feel like that's like a show title kind of name of something.
It's just a combination between Bing and Google.
Yeah, I know. Bingle Maps.
So you could make it up. I mean, it is, in fact, made up.
Yeah, it is. Somebody made it up at some point in time. This is true.
So I think that's about it from the Google Maps announcement. When we get a chance to play with it, we might talk about it a bit, and that could be fun. I'm really excited for topography, actually. Chris, you bike a lot. You know how important it is to know whether you're going uphill or downhill. They'll probably be able to incorporate that into their biking directions eventually.
Yeah, eventually. And aren't their biking directions are still in beta, aren't they?
They are, yeah. So are their walking directions, but they've been around for a while.
Yeah, they have been around for a while. And I don't know. We'll see how they can tie all this stuff together. I mean, Google Maps is really, it's the best mapping app across all the platforms. I think Google Maps on Android specifically is the best free mapping platform as of right now. I don't know. We'll see what Apple has to say about it soon enough.
We will indeed, probably.
And we'll also have to turn on our afterburners. You agree?
Sooner rather than later. In fact, right now.
The HTC One X is finally coming to AT&T. You can check it out in stores June 10th. I'm sure they'll have some demo units or something that you can play with. And you can order it online now if you want.
Right. Now, this was the first really good ice cream sandwich phone for AT&T that we've been waiting for a while.
Right. And with HTC Sense on it.
Right. Sense 4.0. Now, in one more piece of Google news, they have bought Meebo, the instant messaging service, which I've used and loved for a long time.
I like Meebo.
I don't know. They seem to have a strange direction for it. They're integrating Meebo into their Google Plus team. I don't really know how that's going to go, but good for the people who use Meebo. They've been making a really great product for a long time, and hopefully this is a payday for them.
Yeah, hopefully. And I'd like to see some better chat integration to Google Plus, if possible.
I guess I would just rather have more Meebo.
So another app that has been a notable missing spot for Android, Instapaper, has launched. So if you've got Android and you like to save your news for later, go get Instapaper.
Yeah, unless you probably use one of the other, time-shifting article apps that are out there.
Yeah, there's a bunch of alternatives. I bet everybody's kind of already got a workflow going.
Yeah, but I mean, if people really like Instapaper for whatever other platforms they were using, now they can get it on Android. I bet a lot of people download this. So one piece of news from E3, the Wii U is going to get it's going to get video chat and a web browser, I guess, or a web client. You can access the Wii from the web.
Yeah, and
they're going to call it the Miiverse.
Yeah, they've got it's like a social network for Miis.
These names are getting really cumbersome.
Yeah, they're ridiculous. Join me in the Miiverse on my Wii U is the phrase that you would be uttering if you decided to join in on the fun. So I don't know about this Wii U business.
How will I find your me, or how will you find my me?
Oh, boy.
Oh, well, then you have to use the me friend code.
Yeah, so, I don't know. We're not the biggest gamers, so, maybe it's not the most interesting to us.
Have a Wii.
Yeah, I do have a Wii. I just never use it.
Alrighty. Well, with that, let's turn down the afterburners for a bit.
We're going to idle the afterburners, I guess.
Right, we're going to throw out a bunch of Computex stories.
Yeah.
This was the more interesting conference to us because they came out with a lot of weird-looking computers.
Yeah, I mean, Windows 8 is really, I think, inspiring a lot of these weird computers. Because people look at Windows 8 and they say, well, what is that? It's a tablet OS? What do I do with this thing? So then they throw out a bunch of form factors at Computex to see what sticks and see what they actually want to release and what doesn't make it to market.
This is definitely the time for experimentation, and conferences like
The time is now.
Are the place. But this first one, I don't think it's Windows 8 inspired. In fact, nobody really seems to know what inspired it. Toshiba is announcing an ultra widescreen ultrabook. So it's instead of 16:9, which is your regular widescreen, it's double letterbox 21:9. So it's more than twice as wide as it is tall.
Yeah, and this is kind of weird. I mean, I understand, I think at some point in time on the podcast, I ranted about why people would still use a 4:3 monitor and that it's a bad compromise to use a 4:3 monitor, and that something like 16:10 or something like that is probably better, and 16:9 for laptops is probably fine, right? But
right.
This goes in the other direction in a way that is kind of crazy.
It is really crazy. You know, I think they're missing the point again, just like everybody seems to be, because they went with a resolution of 1792 by 768. Sure, that sounds pretty impressive, but it's not 1080p. Like, if you're going to release a laptop, if you're going to release a screen in 21 by 9, at least let it be able to play ultra-widescreen movies natively.
Yeah, and then it really can't. And it, I don't know, this thing is just kind of bizarre. You know, some movies, like, if you're watching TV shows, they're not even in 21 by 9. It's only movies, and I just don't see why you would want or need that in a crazy laptop like this. But I don't know. We'll see. I mean, that's what Computex is for. It's to see what sticks.
Yeah, well, I guess there will certainly be some people who are interested in it. Maybe people who edit a lot of panorama photographs?
Yeah, and I would normally say, you know, if this thing were a little more powerful, maybe people who edit movies remotely, stuff like that. I could kind of see some kind of use case going around there, but I mean, that's pretty niche.
But it can't. I mean, there are already plenty of full 1080p laptops out there, and those would all be a better choice than this for someone who is editing movies.
Yeah. Well, at least it's got the new dual core Ivy Bridge. That's at least a good mark for it.
Yeah, but I think all the computers, maybe not tablets, but all the computers that we're seeing from Computex, most of them anyway, have the new Intel processors.
Right, so it is kind of interesting, but I don't know. We'll see if it sticks.
Right. So this next one I definitely really like. These are all-in-one touchscreen computers from Acer. So you get a 27-inch one called the 7600U and a 23-inch called the 5600U. And it's this 27-inch computer, so I guess it's sort of an iMac competitor, is the really interesting one. It has a multi-touch display that can handle up to 64 simultaneous inputs. I could just imagine, like, you know, since you can fold it flat like a table, like you can turn it into a touchscreen table, and I can imagine people playing fun games and stuff. I think that would be really cool.
Yeah, it's almost to me, it's like a mini Microsoft Surface of some kind. That's really neat.
Yeah, pretty much. But then it can also be a regular desktop.
Or I could also see some situation where you put this thing on the coffee table and you're controlling what's on your TV with this dashboard of information with this thing. That would be kind of cool, too.
Yeah, that might be a little crazy, a little bit of overkill. Maybe the 23-inch one would be better for that. I mean, do you really need a 27-inch multi-touch remote for your TV?
Do you even have to ask? Of course you do.
All right, well, then you should buy it. Now, Chris, I know that you're generally against all-in-ones, but something like this where they're really trying to expand the definition of a desktop, do you think this might be a good purchase for some people?
This is a little different because I think it's aimed at a different place. I think the all-in-ones that just sit there on the desk and, you know, don't have anything else going on, you use a mouse and keyboard, I think it's a little bit goofy because you're coupling together things that don't necessarily need to be coupled together, and you get messy wires everywhere if you start to add peripherals to it and stuff like that. And I don't know, it just gets really weird. It seems elegant, but then in practice it's not elegant, in my experience at least. It's better to kind of like have the wire to the monitor and then ferret it away somewhere than it is to have all the peripherals laying around. But anyway, this is targeted differently, right? I mean, it's a touchscreen. I don't see a keyboard laying around there, so that kind of makes sense. So this thing would literally have a power wire and end of conversation. So that kind of makes a little more sense to me. And depending on what you're going to do with it, I mean, I guess there's still the problem that you could have peripherals everywhere with this thing, but for some reason I see this as more of a standalone thing. Like, I wouldn't imagine you'd walk up to this thing and plug your iPod in and then sync stuff to it.
I think, but you're able to do that too. I mean, the whole point is that it does both of those things.
Yeah,
it serves a bunch of different functions. It is a desktop, but it's not just a desktop. I mean, yeah, they do show it in photos upright with a keyboard and a mouse.
And I'm kind of interested to see if this kind of idea of this giant screen could take off, where you sit at your desk and you kind of look down at it and touch it. Because we've always had this, we've always had user experience people tell us you don't want to do that. And I'm not so sure that's the case.
Yeah, I think if it's fold flat, people are not going to want to use it that way all day. And then that 23-inch Acer computer, it doesn't fold flat, but it folds most of the way. So it folds like down to like 30 degrees from horizontal. And so the idea being is that it's sort of like a giant tablet.
Yeah, definitely. So in the photo gallery in the post here, they're showing off it with a mouse and keyboard, and it just kind of like tilted over as kind of a mini Microsoft Surface kind of deal. It's just really cool.
Right.
I got to go get my hands on one and play around with it at Best Buy or something.
I do think they made one mistake, though. The 27-inch computer is still just 1980 by 1020. They could have gone bigger.
Yeah, they just need 60 more pixels, and then they'd be 1080p.
No, that is 1080p.
1020?
No, it's 1080.
Oh, there we
go.
Did
I say 1020?
Okay. You said 1020.
That's a silly number. That doesn't
make sense. Just 60 pixels, man.
It's 1080p, but they should have gone bigger.
You think they should have gone bigger? Yeah, I guess, yeah. You know, if you're using
you can buy, I mean, there are lots of manufacturers that are making the 27-inch 2560 by 1440.
Well, if you're using it as a touchscreen, you're going to have to be at least within an arm's length of it. So I could see the distance to the screen being an issue with the pixel density.
Right. The pixel density is not high enough.
Right. Well, right. That's what I mean. So like with a TV, it doesn't matter as much because you're further away from it. But if you are forced to be within an arm's length of this thing, then the pixel density gets even more important.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, so that one's pretty interesting. We've got a little bit more from Acer. They've also got some little netbook tablet dealios. What do you think about these things?
I think that they are really trying to figure out what to do about Windows 8.
Yeah, and that's the X factor here, right? Like I said earlier, people are like, what? What's going on there?
And even whether or not they've figured it out with this round, you know, like even if they get some of the concepts right, even if they get more right than wrong, definitely most users should wait until the next round where we really know what Windows 8 tablets are going to look like before you buy one of these.
Or just be really sure that you know what you want. I think maybe people that listen in to us probably know a little bit more about what they want in terms of their personal technology. But the general consumer, yeah, I'd probably recommend that you let them figure this out first.
Well, I'll tell you what they have on here that I do want is an 11.6-inch full 1080p display. So they go 11 inches, 1080p. 27 inches, 1080p. Like, I get maybe they're trying to go for consistency here, but like, they really have a scaling problem.
Yeah, that is a little strange. And what do you think about an 11-inch tablet? It's a little bit bigger than the iPad. You think that's fine?
Well, I think this is sort of more of a laptop than a tablet.
Yeah.
And I think that's fine.
So, by the way, they're called the Iconio W700 is the 11.6-inch one. And they also have a 10.1-inch device that is called the W510, which is a little bit more in line with the size of the iPad.
Right. And it's more tablet-y.
Right, it's more tablet-y than its larger brother. So this thing just breaks away from the keyboard, and it's cool. It's cool. Like we said, yeah. Experimentation is the name of this.
Yeah.
We'll see what shakes out.
Wait, don't buy, but definitely play with it if you get a chance. All right, so one more Acer story, and that's in between the 10-inch and the 27-inch. They're coming out with some straight-up Ultrabooks. Get yourself an 11.6-incher, a 13.3, and that's all we heard about so far. But yeah, these are your run-of-the-mill Ultrabooks, and they're running Windows 8.
Yeah, it looks cool. I'd be curious to see how Windows 8 gets along with a device like this that is not touchscreen-centric. In fact, I kind of know because I've been using it on my netbook.
I was trying to find the right way to say that.
No,
you already know.
It's a little bit different because that my netbook is even smaller than this thing. But I'd be curious to see how normal people would go and use this thing. You know, would they just turn on desktop and try to forget about Metro? Or do you think they'd like the simpler interface? Or do you think they'd try to touch the screen and look like an idiot? I could see all of those things happening to different people.
Right. Now, the thing I like best about these Acer Ultrabooks is that they've claimed that they've developed a brand new cooling system called Twin Air, and it's going to make their Ultrabooks run much cooler. I think that is always important in laptops of our era.
Yeah, very important. So, and it's got a backlit keyboard. I'm telling you, this thing is pretty interesting.
Oh, well, that should just be a given.
But it's not a given.
Oh, it is for Apple, though.
Yes. So let's move right along and talk about Asus, and they've got another tablet. It's called the Tablet 600, and it's going to run Windows RT. That's the ARM version of Windows, so you get the NVIDIA Tegra 3. And they've got a dock that you can just rip the tablet off of, and you then get a tablet and a laptop kind of in one.
Right, this thing looks pretty cool. You know, I worry, though, the one thing that I worry about here is whether somebody goes out and buys this computer and it's probably going to be, or this tablet, and it's probably going to be $500 or less, and they're expecting a Windows computer, but you're not getting a Windows computer with Windows RT. You're really getting their Metro interface in a kind of a touchscreen mode.
Yeah. I mean, you're getting the core of Windows 8. You know, when I'm using Windows 8, I try to stay in Metro as much as I can. But
the core of Windows 8 is just not what most people think when they think Windows.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, it's gonna be challenging for Microsoft and all of these device makers to see how people think about Windows 8 and whether or not that is technically successful or not.
Right. So, but this is the first tablet with a detachable keyboard, where I look at it and go, okay, I think that makes sense.
Yeah, I could see that, because you can use Office on this, right?
Right.
So you could potentially go and actually do a little bit of work. You don't get the full desktop, but they'll at least throw Office at you. And, it's a native keyboard. It's not this, like, weird hack-on Bluetooth thing that some, you know, with, like, the cases that have the keyboards in it. I think this is kind of cool.
Right.
And you've got a trackpad if you want to use it. That's one thing. When you look at a case with an iPad and a keyboard in it, there's no way of controlling the iPad without sticking your arm up and touching it.
That's true, and I know people who've been really bothered by that. But honestly, I think throwing that trackpad in there is just hedging their bets, and I think it's a wussy move, and I think they should get rid of it.
But anyway, it looks competent enough. We'll have to see. You know what? I'm excited. I'm excited for Windows.
All right. So we've been talking about laptop/tablets. but Asus had another trick up their sleeve, and that's a desktop tablet. So I think the biggest tablet screen that we had talked about so far was 13 or 14 inches. Now they've got one that's 18.4 inches.
Yikes. I like this. Do you carry this thing with you, or do you use it as a desktop?
I do not know what you do. Apparently, you hold it up on stage and display it, and then you put it right back down.
That's almost as big as the monitors that are sitting on my desk right in front of me here.
So pick up one of those monitors and use it as a touchscreen.
Yeah, I guess that's potentially what you're doing. And I mean, I sit too far away from these things to do anything about it, but I don't know. I think I could see some kind of use case for this thing as like a Microsoft Surface kind of deal, you know.
Maybe. Well, I mean, it's the name of the game, experimentation.
Yeah, I don't know. Like we keep saying, we'll see what shakes out of this.
Right. Probably not this one.
Oh, and this one, by the way, we should mention the name of everything we talk about. It's the Asus IO. It's capital A I capital O IO.
And then a question mark?
Then a question mark, yeah.
No, not really, but it's how it sounded like when you said it.
Yes, that's because it's confusing to me. All right, finally, the last bit of our Computex stories. We've got another Windows 8 tablet hybrid PC thing, and this one's from Samsung. It's called the Series 5 Hybrid, and it's got a stylus if you want. It's got a keyboard and a trackpad, and you can remove the screen just like with the other, just like the other tablet hybrid, and it's cool. It's same kind of thing. And this one's a little prettier though, isn't it?
It is pretty. I mean, Samsung is good at making nice looking hardware. But I mean, stylus really? Well, like I don't get why Samsung is so hung up on bringing back the stylus.
Yeah, I mean, there are use cases for Styli. And it just happens to be that it's not, there's not a use case with the average consumer and the large market for a stylus. But there are plenty of use cases for a stylus, and I think they're trying to fill that niche.
Well, I'm just not seeing it. All right, most, well, we still have the afterburners on. I think it's time to turn them off of idle. Let's slow back down. Let's talk at our own pace now.
Yeah, that was like the afterburners over two.
Too nerdy, Chris. Too nerdy.
Yeah, so let's get into the end user stories, and we've got some interesting news that kind of befuddles me a little bit. It's called Airtime. What do you think about Airtime?
I think it's just chat roulette.
Yeah, it is. It's exactly like chat roulette, except for you authenticate against Facebook instead of just having random people on the internet be able to talk to you.
Well, so the other thing I like about Airtime versus chat roulette is that you can actually talk to your own friends if you want to. The random person feature is just a bonus.
Yeah, and why would you not use the built-in Skype in Facebook? Why would you go use another application to do this? I mean, Facebook already does this. Well, why do we need something else on the side to do something with?
I don't know why we need it. Only Sean Parker knows why we need it.
Only Sean Parker knows. And the UI does look kind of interesting. It kind of reminds me of Google Hangouts a little bit. You get the little pictures down there at the bottom, and you can chat with friends, I guess. I don't know. I just don't see the need for this, and I don't think this is going to pass the, you know, 6 or 7 months that it takes for a startup app like this to either die or live. I'm not sure it's going to make it out of that time period.
Well, I doubt they have any kind of monetization strategy, so
yeah, probably not.
Maybe there is a non-monetization strategy that will allow the app to survive.
Yeah, just for the love of it.
Right.
All right. Well, go check it out. Let us know what you think. The end user at thedigitalmediazone.com. And let's move on to toward the end of the podcast here. Something that actually is really exciting. I think we may have buried the lead on this. It's Microsoft Smart Glass, their demo of their new entertainment strategy at E3. So there's a lot of stuff going on here. So we're probably not going to be able to get into the amount of detail that I would actually like. But more or less, the idea is that you have a tablet and you're watching TV, and you can look at content on the tablet that is related to the content you're watching on the TV. So the example they gave is they were watching Game of Thrones, I guess, on the TV, and they had an interactive map that the... Who makes Game of Thrones? It's HBO, right?
It is HBO, yeah.
HBO gives them some metadata and makes a map. And then you can interact with the map in real time as you watch the content on the TV.
Game of Thrones nerds are all about the maps. There's people who actually make their own maps and then debate about which map is more accurate.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think that example is kind of silly, and it's kind of a silly demo. But I think the idea that you would just even have IMDb up on a tablet in front of you while you're on the couch and watching a movie is kind of smart.
Yeah, with IMDb at least, I feel like I do that all the time.
Yeah, I do.
And sometimes if you are trying to figure out who's a guest star on a particular show that you're watching, IMDb is not always the most helpful device for that. So if you could have something a little bit more customized, it might be worth it. But so I think the really cool thing about Xbox Smart Glass is that usually with all this Xbox ecosystem stuff, you have to use Microsoft products. You have to have an Xbox Live account. But this is going to be available for Windows Phone, Android, iOS, as well as Windows 8, or maybe Windows RT, I don't know.
And I think to use the to get all of the features out of this, you do need to have a Live account, though. But yeah, in terms of hardware, it's pretty much platform agnostic. I guess maybe who would they leave out? Ubuntu?
Well, and Mac OS X.
Oh, yeah. So I guess they're only going toward their desktop operating system, and they're going for the phone and the tablet and all the mobile platforms. But I guess they left out OS X. Why'd they leave out OS X?
But it's still a cool idea. It's very forward thinking.
Yeah, definitely so. And the one thing I think needs to happen eventually is I think they need to have some kind of free tier of their Xbox Live account, because it seems ridiculous to me that you have to pay an ongoing subscription to get some of this stuff on the Xbox. And I think if they dropped that and maybe not even offered everything that they offer right now, then they'd come out ahead in the end.
They might.
Yeah, so the other bit is from Windows 8, you can use their Play 2 functionality. So you get this kind of AirPlay thing going on where you can sling content back and forth between your TV and the screen you're using. So that's kind of cool.
So this is a music service from Microsoft. So this is Zune, right?
No. It's no longer Zune, Taylor. We can lay the Zune to rest.
Yeah, but it's really Zune, right?
Yeah, it's really Zune. So they're releasing Xbox Music was the other last bit of the Microsoft E3 announcement. And yeah, basically looks like not a whole lot's changing. They're going to update their applications. They're going to still have the same streaming service as the Zune was.
Yeah, I guess that's pretty cool, especially for people who like Zune. They're out there.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of a compelling service. Not a lot of people use it, but I think it is a technically successful thing. I think the Zune software on the PC is pretty decent. It's a bit of a power hog, but it's pretty decent. I think the Zune software on Windows Phone is really good, and I think they've got some good products, and I think they've got the wrong brand for it. So I think it'll be good for them to rebrand it as Xbox Live.
Yeah, probably. They're definitely trying
to... Xbox Music, I should say.
Consolidate their brands that way. That's never bad. Well, not usually.
Yeah, not usually. So yeah, I mean, it not a whole lot has changed. So if you know about the Zune service, it's pretty much staying the same.
Right. Well, anything else you want to talk about before we move on to our tip of the week?
No, let's go on to our tip of the week. And
Chris, this is your tip of the week.
It's my tip. I can't believe it.
I'm so proud of you.
Yes. And we're staying on the Microsoft path, though, which is kind of neat. But yeah, this is an application for Android called OnX. And that's like on open squiggly bracket X close squiggly bracket. Which...
Wait, hold on. It's a Microsoft Android app?
It is. Well, you know, they have a few Android apps now. They've got OneNote. Now they've got OnX, and it's from Microsoft's Israel division, oddly enough. And it's a weird, like, natural scripting language.
I don't know what that means.
So you can say stuff like, when I arrive home, remind me to buy milk. You can just type that out, and it will do so. Or you could say, when I start running, play music.
Okay, I think I get it. I just have one question. Why are you buying milk when you get home? Is it because you live in a grocery store?
That is a little bit of a strange example. But yeah, you can say stuff like, if I haven't been to the gym in 3 days, remind me. And so there's another automation app that I used to use called Tasker on Android, and that one's pretty good, but this looks a little more streamlined, so I'll have to give this a shot on my old Android phone.
Now, so the whole thing about scripting is that you want it to be efficient, right? You don't want it to use up resources unnecessarily. Like, if you use your example, remind me if I haven't been to the gym in 3 days... then I would worry that this is going to start like pinging your GPS every 30 seconds. Are you at the gym?
No,
Are you at the gym?
Well, I don't know. I'd have to... that's a long-term investigation that I haven't been able to do yet. But.
Well, but I'm sure they're working on getting those type of efficient streamlining operations happening behind the scenes.
I bet you they don't... they wouldn't be dumb enough to ping the GPS every 30 seconds for 3 days. That's a bad idea. Yeah, this looks really cool. So if you're interested in, if you realize that you're doing these kind of repetitive tasks, you know, when you get home, turn on your Wi-Fi, for example, then you can do that kind of stuff automatically, and you don't even have to think about it. So this seems like a good way to do it. And if you don't like this, then try Tasker. That's also a good way to do it. The double tip. I didn't even know I was going to give a double tip of the week, but there you go.
a double tip with nothing for iPhone users.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, we drew blank on the iPhone.
Or even Windows Phone.
Yeah, or even my platform of choice, the Windows Phone.
All right. Well, I think our kicker this week applies to pretty much no one who'd ever listen to our show. unless you have $190,000 just lying around. Just kind of wanted to buy a hovercraft that's also a plane.
I mean, why wouldn't you want to buy that? I don't understand. Like, is this a question that somebody would not want to buy this?
Well, I can just think of other better things to buy to spend $190,000 on.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not the fact that you wouldn't want to have a flying hovercraft. It's the fact that it cost $190,000.
Well, yeah, of course.
Yeah, but this thing is odd looking. It's like a flying It's like a flying duck.
It's very strange. It's especially strange to see, like, it's a hovercraft, but then it's hovering 3 feet off the ground. And so then why is the hovercraft doing it? Oh, it's because it has wings. I don't quite know why you need a hovercraft plane, but it is pretty awesome.
And I think you know why you need a hovercraft plane, and that's because it is awesome. You got right. it. Yeah, so follow the link. You got to see the picture. You can't just listen to us blather on about this, but follow the link, go over to CNET, look at the flying hovercraft, and squee with joy.
Right, so 70 miles an hour top speed, 20 feet off the ground, top height, 160 miles, top range, 600 pounds. Top cargo capacity.
So if you can go 20 feet off the ground, you could potentially just fly right over traffic.
Yeah, you definitely could, albeit at a scarily low level for the people in the traffic.
Yeah, and you probably the hover aspect of this would blow air down on the cars just as an extra insult as you pass them by.
No, I think it probably turns that off or turns it down a bit. That I mean, it's hovercrafts don't really blow that much air straight down. I mean, it's a lot of air, but it's not like a helicopter amount of air.
Right, right. Yeah, because it doesn't need to be when it's in hover mode, I guess.
Right. So the thing is, like, you can go above traffic, but you can also just go around traffic because a hovercraft can just float over any terrain. It's not constricted by roads.
Yeah, so this is really cool. So follow the link and go have a look. It's pretty interesting. So I think that'll do it for this week. We made it, Taylor. We made it through an E3 and Computex podcast. We made it.
I'm just glad I made it through the last non-Worldwide Developers Conference week of the first half of this year.
Yeah, so we're going to have some exciting news next week, so stay tuned. At least right. I hope we are.
I thought that we would have nothing to talk about this week.
Yeah, it turns out you were way wrong.
As I do all weeks, that there are not gigantic Apple announcements.
Yeah, in fact, we even had to cut out a bunch of news so that we could fit the podcast into a reasonable length. Taylor, what's your Twitter handle?
My Twitter handle is at TaylorPhone.
All right, and I am at Chris Hale Barnes. And thank you, everyone, for listening to the show. Of course, you can find more information, including the show notes, at thedigitalmediazone.com under the end user. That's THENDUSR. DMZ has a few other podcasts. You can have a look at Entertainment 2.0 for your Media Center news, Scene in HD for your TV and HD news, and the Movie Podcast for your movie news. Got it all covered. You can also send us some feedback at theenduser@thedigitalmediazone.com, or you can stop by our live chat every Thursday night at 8:30 Eastern Time. I'm your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm Taylor Marr, not Chris Barnes.
Thanks for listening, folks. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Or am I?
Or am I?